On December 7, 1941, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, bringing America into World War II. The United States and the world were very different at Christmas time more than 75 years ago. Stanley Weintraub captures the events and the mood of that holiday season in his book, Pearl Harbor Christmas, A World at War, December 1941. Weintraub is an award-winning author and professor emeritus of arts and humanities at Penn State University. He's also an expert on wartime Christmases, having written several books on the topic. In 1941, Weintraub says the political milieu around the world looked grim.
What was going on as far as the allies-to-be would be concerned, everything was going badly. One loss after another, everything looked bleak. This was before the Japanese had even attacked. Britain was feeling isolated. Europe was almost completely dominated and occupied by the Germans. The Russians were trying to save Leningrad, now St. Petersburg, and Moscow. The Germans were at the gates. So things were very bad indeed, and they would get worse.
In the States, the mood was isolationist. Nobody wanted to go to war, although our factories did provide armaments for the British to help their cause. Even the great aviator Charles Lindbergh didn't think the Japanese would attack us.
He spoke for the America First Committee, and he said, "I'm a flyer, and I know the Japanese can't fly planes, so they have very bad eyesight, and we don't have to worry about the Japanese."
Even as the Japanese were planning the attack on the Pacific Fleet, Weintraub says their diplomats were in Washington talking peace.
But it was fraudulent, and we knew it would be fraudulent because we had intercepted their diplomatic code. But we did not know that they were going to go to war against us. We thought that they would attack the weak colonial powers in the Asian Rim, like Britain, which had Hong Kong and Malaya and Singapore, and the Dutch, who had what we now call Indonesia, and French colonies like Indochina, which is now Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos. We figured all of those were going to go.
Prime Minister Winston Churchill took no joy in the attack at Pearl Harbor, although Weintraub says he saw it as an opportunity to bring the might, money, and manpower of the United States into the European conflict.
He got the news at dinner on a Sunday night, and he told the people at dinner with him that he was saved. Britain was saved because despite what bleak outcome there would be for the rest of December, he knew that with the industrial and military potential of America, victory seemed assured. But with Japan as a new partner, even Adolf Hitler saw victory as guaranteed. He said, "We can't lose the war at all. We now have an ally which has never been conquered in 3,000 years. So both sides thought that America's entrance into the war was going to be victory for their side.
Churchill knew he had to convince Roosevelt to enter the European war first, so he sailed to the U.S. to plead his case. Churchill's ship landed at Hampton Roads, Virginia, where he caught a plane to Anacostia Air Base just outside Washington. Roosevelt was there to meet him, despite the discomfort the president experienced from his 20-year battle with polio.
Churchill was a rare case of a guest at the White House from a foreign country. He expected to stay at the British Embassy, but again, for reasons of diplomacy and solidarity with the British, Roosevelt insisted he stay at the White House. Mrs. Roosevelt went up to the bedroom corridors and picked out what she thought was the best bedroom for Churchill. And he went up and inspected the bedroom, and he didn't like it, and he wandered down the corridors till he found one he liked. I'm reminded of the American comedy of that time called The Man Who Came to Dinner. The man who came to dinner and didn't leave, and it became a very difficult problem for the hosts in that comedy. Well, Churchill was the man who came to dinner, and he stayed and stayed and stayed.
The prime minister loved giving speeches, and he addressed the public and politicians whenever the opportunity arose, at the National Christmas Tree Lighting, a joint session of Congress the day after Christmas, and the Canadian Parliament right before their New Year's recess. Churchill also took advantage of pre-war American consumerism, stocking up on gifts for his family back home.
He knew that the stores were stocked with all kinds of stuff over here, where rationing of everything, including clothing and shoes, was the situation in England. He contacted his wife, Clementine, and asked her about her size stockings. He wanted to buy her stockings. We had something new then in America, newly invented, called nylon stockings. And that was a very big deal to be able to get nylon stockings. pretty soon Americans couldn't get them either because the nylon was taken over by the government to use for parachutes.
Weintraub says the mood in the U.S. was somber because of the attack on Pearl Harbor. However, it was also not as gloomy as it could have been. That was due, Weintraub said, to reports sent by General George MacArthur that painted the strike as less damaging than it really was. However, in Germany, things were cold and harsh for the Nazis.
They were unprepared for a long winter. They expected to have defeated Russia before the first snows. And propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels went on Berlin radio to ask the Germans to donate winter clothing as Christmas presents for soldiers. Although, of course, the Germans had wiped Christmas off the holiday calendar. Then Hitler came on the radio with a similar message, mentioning the hitherto unmentionable German people, he began, while the homeland is not directly threatened by the enemy, if the German people wishes to give something to its soldiers at Christmas, it should give the warmest clothing it can do without during the war. In peacetime, after victory, all this can easily be replaced. So, for the first time in his career as dictator, Hitler mentioned Christmas.
In Washington, the president, his guests, and staff sat down to a traditional holiday feast, though there was a rather embarrassing incident that occurred in one of the dinners given for the visiting dignitaries who were meeting to discuss war plans.
General Marshall, the chief of staff, had dinners for people who didn't fit in the White House, who were part of that meeting group. And General Marshall's wife, Catherine, learned that Field Marshal Sir John Dill, who was the leading British general, had a birthday on Christmas Day. And so she sent out her husband's efficient aide, Sergeant Powder, to try to procure a cake and candles, even though it was Christmas Day. And he returned with miniature flags to decorate the cake, too. And as they sang Happy Birthday, those around the table discovered that the flags read Made in Japan.
In the Pacific, Christmas was very bleak for servicemen abroad. And in the Philippines and Hawaii, it was pretty much non-existent.
MacArthur had to abandon Manila at Christmas. And so our troops in the Philippines were already suffering food shortages and shortages of ammunition, and were fleeing the Japanese invasion from the north of Luzon Island. Christmas didn't occur to them. They didn't have one. As far as troops in Hawaii were concerned, they were in shock. They knew how bad things were. In fact, the smoke and debris were still a sight in Pearl Harbor, and they were hard to avoid in Honolulu. The smoke still rose.
Admiral Chester Nimitz saw firsthand the carnage of Pearl Harbor when President Roosevelt sent him there to assess the damage and lead the Navy in the Pacific.
And when he was ferried from the seaplane by what they called a whaleboat to Pearl Harbor, he had to travel through thick oil slick with debris floating around and bodies still rising from the entombed ships in the harbor. It was a grim sight, and this was on Christmas Day. He asked as soon as he arrived, "What's the news from Wake Island?" Wake Island was our fortified island in the middle of the Pacific, where trans-Pacific planes usually landed on their way to Asia, on their way basically to Manila. He discovered that Wake Island had been surrendered that day. The Marines had fought off the Japanese once, but the Japanese came back and invaded, and what was left of our force there had to surrender. And they were prisoners of war if they survived for the rest of the war.
The American public went on to celebrate New Year as usual, but everyone knew that hard times were coming. Weintraub said that arrangements were made to make everyone feel safe and celebrate the last hurrah before the war began in earnest.
There was no lessening of the amount of celebration and alcohol consumed and so on. And the usual traditional practice at Times Square of dropping the ball down at midnight continued as usual. Crowds were as big as they had ever been. No one expected air raids, but just to make the people feel safe, even though we didn't have enough anti-aircraft guns around, the government established on the roofs of buildings in Washington, D.C., some phony wooden anti-aircraft guns to make people think that they were being protected. New Year's Eve was still a period when there were no blackouts.
You can read about the last peacetime holiday before the war in Stanley Weintraub's book, Pearl Harbor Christmas, available now. You can also find out more about all of our guests at viewpointsonline.net. Our show is written and produced by Evan Rook and Pat Reuter. Our executive producer is Reed Pence. Our production director is Sean Waldron. I'm Marty Peterson.
America, We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.